Hey there, Freedom Fighters. My name is Andrew Warner. I'm the founder of Mixergy, where I interview entrepreneurs about how they built their businesses for an audience of very ambitious listeners. And if you listen to my interviews over the years, you might notice that in the early days, I did a lot of interviews with entrepreneurs who had content-based businesses. They had these blogs. They had these, basically it was mostly blogs, and they did pretty well. And then it all became SaaS, and then it started to become a little bit of mobile apps, and then more mobile apps, and then e-commerce started to creep in. But the content sites started to go away. The content sites, frankly, started to have such a hard time online that they weren't doing well enough for me to interview them. And then I discovered today's guest. Today's guest is Evan Varsamis. He runs a site called Gadget Flow. Gadget Flow is for gadget lovers like me. It's like this type of, I don't get sucked into Facebook. I could get away from Facebook in a second. It's mostly people sharing photos of themselves and bragging. I don't give a rip about that. But for some reason, just seeing the latest gadgets makes me feel like I'm in the future. And so what Gadget Flow does for me is create this addictive experience where I just scroll through all these products. They've got these beautiful shots. They've got links to go buy them or read more, and I could get lost in it. And that's what today's guest created using a basic WordPress site. And he's built it up to, according to SimilarWeb, about 1 million hits a month. And it's doing well revenue-wise. I'm going to ask him about that. And we'll find out how the profit of the business is going and how he got started. All right, we're going to interview the founder of Gadget Flow, the product discovery platform that helps you discover, save, and buy awesome products thanks to two phenomenal sponsors. The first will let you kind of copy what Evan did on your own. It's called HostGator. It'll let you publish your own WordPress site. And the second will help you hire phenomenal developers. It's called TopTal, but I'll tell you and Evan all about them later. First, I got to welcome you. Evan, good to have you here.
Thanks for having me.
Evan, we were scheduled to do this interview weeks and weeks ago. I called you. You didn't turn on your camera. And you said, Andrew, I'd rather not do it today. What was going on?
I was burned out, 100%. It was 100%. It was like at the end of a 15-hour day, and I was like exhausted. I was like, I can't do this right now. Sorry about that.
And partially it's because you're where in the world?
Right now I'm in Greece. I'm usually based in New York City though.
And so that's what it was. You and I were talking. What time is it now when we're talking?
It's like 8:15.
8:15 p.m.
Yes.
So basically you had a full day today and still at 8 p.m. you're doing this interview with me, and the same thing or something similar happened before. These are the types of days that you're living right now.
Oh yeah, 100%. Totally.
I got to tell you, I was looking at your numbers. I said, boy, this is impressive. Your model makes a lot of sense. You have these beautiful shots of latest gadgets, links to more information about them. And when I buy, you get a commission on that. I thought the model makes sense. I'm looking over your shoulder. You live in the beautiful Greece lifestyle. You had a smile on your face when I talked to you. I felt like you had it easy. Why are you? What's the hard part that keeps you working this hard?
Yeah, definitely it's not easy. Like we launched Gadgetflow back in 2012, three Greek co-founders, and we scaled the business organically, no VC funding, no angel funding or anything like that. So It's mostly, I would say that for primarily, it's like 15-hour days, especially for us as three founders. And then later,
What did you do today?
About 13, 14 meetings, primarily with the team, because we just came back from our team retreat in Japan, which was awesome. But lots of things to go through, lots of notes to go through, and to plan ahead.
So the model isn't as easy as it seems to me. You guys know what is? I saw you roll your eyes. I said it. I got to stop it. You're asking the question. What is the model then? If it's not as I described it.
Yeah. So first of all, you only see 10-15% on the front end. So Gadgetflow is a product discovery platform. We curate 12 new products every single day. We're going to take commissions though, zero commissions. What we do is that we write a high quality description. We showcase, high quality photos and videos, and we make it easy basically for our users to discover great new products and make them understand how they work and how they, they might be useful for them. So it's great for someone that's commuting. It's great for someone who's looking for a gift and, any similar scenario. Now from our side though, Gadgetflow is this product discovery platform that also helps businesses scale their sales or businesses basically increase awareness, right? Now, it's not just the product discovery platform. We have a podcast, we have a blog, we're covering events such as the one that Google did yesterday. So it's definitely a lot of, editorial coverage and a hybrid model between a marketplace and a blog, I would say.
Okay, but if I understand it right, you guys still will link to Amazon, and don't you use Amazon affiliate links on that?
No. No, we actually don't use any affiliate URLs. What we do when customers approach us, basically, we say that we charge like a one-time flat fee. We have promotional packages available that basically, you know, if you submit a product, it will go through an evaluation process from our editorial team. And if it's a great fit, if it's something that we would feature anyway, then it gets approved. And the only benefit that you get from just paying Gadgetflow is that, you know, you have more prominent spots, you get more feature placements, you get to be part of our daily newsletter, weekly newsletter. So, you know, that's how we do it.
So it's advertising based.
Pretty much. Yes.
Pretty much. Is there anything else that I'm missing? So just so I'm clear, if a product, like, look at this, this is why I can't check out your site even for research. I just get sucked into this freaking thing. Suddenly I want a retro compact mechanical keyboard. I feel like that would inspire me to type. I should get that. $119 bucks. Let's click over and see it. It's possible that company would come to you and say, Evan, we want to pay for ads to get more of your people to see us. And then they pay you money and get in your email newsletter, get a little more prominence on your website, et cetera.
Correct. That's exactly how it works.
All right. And the total revenue is what?
It's above 2 million right now for 2018.
2 million. You guys profitable?
Yes.
First
year. Yeah. We're a self-sustained business. So, you know, we had to be in a way.
Have you been able to deposit in a bank account somewhere or collective bank account of all three of you founders over $1 million? Or is this just slightly profitable?
Not yet, but we got a valuation that it's over 17 million. So that's good, I guess.
Because somebody was offering to invest in the company.
Yeah, we had M&A requests in the past, but yeah.
Wow. All right. That's a pretty impressive business. You're in Greece right now. You actually grew up in Athens, Greece, started coding from what I understand at an early age. How old?
13, 14 years old. Like, I started coding, then I went to like graphic design, and then I got sucked to like web design because it was pretty much a combination of both, right? So I always enjoyed like, you know, web design, building websites and services and this and that. So
getting paid for it at all?
Yeah, I actually launched the company in Greece when I was like 17 with a friend who was like older than me. And we were like knocking doors at stores, local stores here in Athens. And we're like, hey, you know, websites are trending. You could increase your sales. Let us build your website. So that worked pretty well for like, you know, just a few months.
Oh, wow. All right. Fantastic. And like me, you're watching Dig Nation. Can you describe to people what Dig Nation was? It was a pretty big thing at the time.
Oh, man. Like Dig Nation, you know, basically inspired me in a way to get involved with the tech industry. I mean, Dig Nation, dig.com as a website was like a news tech website, which was highlighting like the latest tech stories and everything. And then it was Alex and Kevin Rose, who were like talking about the, you know, the most popular stories of the week and everything. So I remember that I was rushing home from school just to watch this thing. I was like excited. I was eating lunch and I was watching this and I was like, man, I wish I was like one of these two guys one day. So pretty pumped.
And you know what? And I think you might actually exceed them, that your site might end up being more successful than theirs. Their site, dig.com, Kevin Rose's site anyway, went down, but it was huge for a long time, and Dig Nation showed the world, here's what's happening in tech that's exciting, and they made it exciting, and you got sucked into that. Your dad was in computer hardware, which is what gave you access to computers. What did he do in computer hardware?
No, he had like a hardware store, like a Best Buy, for instance, here in Athens, with you know, hardware stuff for computers. So I was into gaming, so I could just create my own computer. I was just walking through his store, and I was like, you know, let's build something today. And, you know, high-end graphics cards and stuff like that. So I was into hardware, computer hardware for like, I don't know, like a year or two. I was building like custom computers and stuff. I was enjoying it for sure.
One of the famous entrepreneurs from Greece is Aristotle Onassis, ended up marrying JF Kennedy's widow. He was in the shipping industry and he brought a lot of attention to how big the shipping industry was in Greece. You actually felt it as a kid. How did you feel the shipping industry as a kid?
No, it's definitely huge, and it's still huge today, actually. I would say that Greece and the UK are the, you know, the two capitals of like the shipping market in general.
Did you have family in the business?
Yes. From my mother's side, we do have a family in the business. And, you know, I tried it for a couple of years. It was definitely not for me. You know, definitely profitable business, don't get me wrong, but it wasn't fulfilling. I wasn't like waking up every day and was like, you know, super grateful.
What was a typical day there?
oh, like wake up with an alarm at like 7:30, rush to work and everything, you know, get out like by 5 and everything. And I felt exhausted by like 6 p.m. And I was like, I was working for what, 8, 9 hour days?
What?
Well, basically logistics and stuff related to like shipping.
Trying to figure out where the ships go, that kind of thing?
Well, yeah, pretty much. But we're talking about like 250,000 ton ships, right?
Got
not the small ones.
You know what? Growing up, I used to watch old documentaries about Aristotle Onassis. It seemed like he was living the life, a shipping magnate, which means that he had access to all these ships. He had his own yacht. He would have like this whole setup in there where he would, if he wanted to seduce a woman, he could do it. I love that they would focus on that part of him. And I guess that day to day, especially today, it's just not as exciting. By the way, is tech as exciting as Dignation made it seem to be?
Oh, yeah. 100 times more.
More exciting.
Yeah.
What do you mean? What's the most exciting thing about it for you today?
The fact that it, you know, reused like on a daily basis. Every single day, there's like something new in the market. And that's one of the reasons that we created Gadgetflow pretty much. Like, you can't keep up with everything that's coming out. Like, you got, you know, 1,000 projects on Kickstarter, Indiegogo, like GoFundMe and everything. And on top of that, all these big brands doing R&Ds and R&D basically, and introducing new products to market every single day. So that's great.
I kind of expected, I was surprised when you and I connected and you were going to use AirPods to connect with me. I thought, here's a dude who's going to have like the latest cool retro looking microphone. He's going to have a bunch of like robotic dogs in the background. You don't have any of that. You don't seem as addicted to it as I am.
No, I'm a minimalist, actually. I do have lots of gadgets and stuff. I'm an Apple fan big time. That's why I have the AirPods, and they're like pretty convenient, but I'm a minimalist.
I am too. I am. I think I look at it much more than I buy it, obviously, but yeah. I do sit around thinking, well, this would be pretty hot. This would be pretty hot. Now that I think about it, though, if people started shipping it to me, like if I were in your position, people started sending me stuff to go take a look at it and try it out, I feel so burdened by it. It's more fun to just look at it and imagine it and occasionally buy it than to be surrounded by it.
Yeah. It's definitely interesting if what you're looking at or buying is like useful, because at the end of the day, it comes down to whether you're going to use it or not, right? Not whether it's something fancy for your friends to see, I guess.
All right. So shipping wasn't for you. And then you said, you know what? I'm going to get into this whole tech thing. And then what you did was you opened up a media agency first. What was the media agency?
It was Cloudy basically. So I rented an office right across the shipping company that I was working for back in the day. And I had my best friend, Mike, basically be there like by 9 a.m., try to get as many customers as possible, because I had like just a bit of a background when it comes to like web design and advertising. But everything else, you know, it was pretty much self-taught, if you think about it. No bachelor's degree in advertising or digital marketing or anything like that. So we tried to get as many customers as possible. So I was working 9 to 2 p.m. for the shipping agency, and then I was literally walking for like a minute, and I was going to like the other office, right? And that happened for like, I don't know, like a year, almost a year. So we've worked with some European customers, gaming companies. We built portfolios for photographers, some department stores as well, here in Greece, and it went well. So that's actually how Gadgetflow was born. It was through that agency, because we were thinking like, you know, having customers is great, getting paid on a monthly basis, recurring revenue, blah, 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 that's fine. But since we're like that involved into the market, why don't we like come up with an idea? So we're trying to brainstorm for like days. We came up, you know, with pretty much nothing. And then one day we're sitting at my apartment in Athens with Mike and my girlfriend Cassie, and my partner in life, I guess, at this point. We had this idea for Gadgetflow. We're like, where are we going to go if we want to find like high quality products other than just Amazon and get lost, right? Especially like lots of replicas and stuff like that. And then on the other hand, you had the, what I've mentioned earlier, the fact that all these new products are coming out into the market. How do you stay updated? I mean, you can definitely check out Engadget and The Verge and Gizmodo and everything, but these type of websites write long content, like so much content that you just can go through all of it in a day. So we came up with the idea of Gadgetflow. So we started curating products from day one. Of course, everything was done in-house, especially back in the day.
No, let's pause, because I want to dive into your thought process behind getting it and why you actually know the specific date when you came up with the idea. But first, I want to tell everyone about my first sponsor. It's a company called TopTal. There's a listener, a Mixergy listener named Greg Archibald. And he needed an experienced developer for his site. It's called Greasebook. It's software for the oil and gas industry. I kind of love it when an entrepreneur comes up with software that's not the latest photo app, something that's geared towards a whole other industry. The problem that he had was it was difficult to find and then screen top developers. And we've all had that issue, right? You want to look for a developer. You start putting ads up. You have to go forever trying to figure out who the right guys are. Then you have to start competing against someone. Then you might find someone and then Google's trying to hire her away from you and you're kind of stuck. He had a big issue with that. He also found that local hiring pool was pretty small and recruiters were very expensive. So he said, you know, let's give this company TopTal a shot. If you guys have been listening to me, you know, I've been talking about TopTal for years and I've been using them for years. And so TopTal has an international talent pool already there, set and ready to go. They're the best and there's no recruiting fee. So he called them up. He found a developer from them and that allowed him to focus on his business instead of getting distracted by hiring and managing the whole hiring process. And as a result, he was selected for an energy accelerator. So the business is now doing well. I actually went to his website. It's so interesting, by the way, Evan. When somebody goes out of the tech scene and takes the whole set of ideas that works well in tech and like in our little world and brings it there, like he has this little widget that comes up on the bottom left that says, another person in the oil industry just signed up right now. 20 people just signed up for this. And like all those things that we take for granted that are unusual in the oil and gas industry, he brought to his website. Anyway, if you're out there and you're listening to me and you're equally having a hard time hiring, why don't you just give this company a shot? Greg Archibald did, I did, and so many other people who I've interviewed here on Mixergy and who have listened to Mixergy have used them. In fact, if you go to this URL that I'm about to give you, you're going to get 80 hours of TopTal developer credit when you pay for your first 80 hours. And I should say it's top as in top of your head, tal as in talent, in addition to a no-risk trial period of up to 2 weeks. If at the end of the period you're not 100% satisfied, you will not be billed. Here's the URL. It's toptal.com/Mixergy. Top is on top of your head. Tal isn't the best talent in the world. toptal.com/Mixergy. Evan, I do these ads so much that I swear to you, when I get together with like entrepreneurs here in San Francisco, VCs for dinner, they will in the middle of the dinner as a joke interrupt it and say, and now Andrew's going to do a quick ad for TopTal. That's a good one. But it means it's penetrating.
Yeah, for sure. No, 100%. Hey.
Evan, how is it that when you talked to my producer, you said, we came up with the idea for Gadget Flow August 15, 2012. Who knows the specific date that the business came up with? How did you know the specific date? What happened?
I don't know. I felt something.
You did?
I would definitely remember.
What'd you do? Journal it? Write it in a calendar? I feel a lot of things. I don't remember the day I fell in love with my wife, but I felt something.
If you think hard enough.
I won't remember the exact date.
Right, right. No, I mean, you know, it was a key date for us, first of all, because, you know, we started a business. So, you know, it's an interesting date for us. It will remain, you know, forever in our brain and everything. But I mean, yeah, like we launched this business. We've never expected to work with, you know, companies like DJI or to partner with like Delta Airlines, right?
What you were thinking was, we're going to cover a broader collection of tech, not even the broader tech market. It's products. You're going to focus on specific gadgets, Engadget, which is the baby, the granddaddy of all these different tech companies used to do. They're called Engadget because they covered gadgets. And you said, we're going to take it back to that and just focus on gadgets and more of them.
Yeah, we started by covering just gadgets, like you said, for like the first year or so. And then, you know, we had basically customers, we weren't selling any kind of plans back in the day. So we had people coming to us and saying, hey, you know, your website is doing great. Your social media channels are great and engaging-wise, I guess. How can we get on our website? And we're like, okay, yeah, we'll charge you like $49 to get on Gadgetflow. And we're like, great, let's do it. And they came back like a week and a half later and they were like, oh wow, we generated thousands of dollars in sales. Let's do it again. So, you know, that was
but you knew that advertising from the beginning would be your model. The question I always wonder is, how did you get anyone to come to your site? What was it? Was it search engine optimization? Was it something else? Social?
It was a combination of pretty much everything, I'd say. Definitely lots of growth hacking back in the day because Facebook, you know, the organic, let's just say, reach of Facebook was like, I would say 4 or 5, maybe even 10% in some cases if you had an engaging
Because if somebody hit like on your page, Facebook was going to show your post to them more often, where later they stopped doing that.
The good old days, yeah.
So what did you do to get people to hit like on your page? Did you do the like gate?
So we partnered with a load of like similar interest pages, like Apple fans, you know, the Android world, let's just say, or the, you know, graphic design world and equipment that they're using. So we're like, hey, we're not monetizing the site. That was back in 2012. We're not monetizing the site. So, you know, we just would love to partner and exchange, like, you know, our audiences in a way. So we're like,
meaning, yeah, we'll run a promotion for their site on your blog and they'll do the same for you.
Yeah. It was like, you know, basically a link exchange that we could do, or a post exchange, something like that. And that worked great, to be honest. That brought us the first few thousand subscribers, followers, and everything else. So, you know, it worked great. That was part of the growth hacking technique. And of course, SEO wise, given my, you know, tech background and online advertising background that I had from the agency and then from the web design agency that I had the other, when I was 17, I knew that SEO, you know, would have been like a big part of our marketing strategy. So we paid attention from day one. So that has helped a lot.
What worked for you back in the early days of SEO, search engine optimization?
Backlinks, for sure. We started with backlinks and, you know, basically domain authority was very important. So we managed to have a high score as well. And then, you know, just getting high authority backlinks was by far the most important thing.
How did you get the links? What was your process back then?
Oh, just, you know, the good old like outreach method by email. Hi, you know, I'd like to do this and that. You know,
hi. Yeah. What was it? This and that.
Hi, I would like to buy like, not buy, but most probably write a guest post, right? In which we were paying an editor back in the day to do, would like about to write about this topic and that topic. And, you know, we just need a link back to our website. That was pretty much it.
Pitching. Did you do any ad buys? I think back then it was kind of, it wasn't okay, but it was more of a bigger practice a little bit.
Yeah, I mean, there were some, to be honest, yes. There were some websites that required like a payment in order to publish our blog post. But we wrote the blog post. It was like 100% organic. It wasn't like you were linking on an irrelevant article, you know, on our website, right? So it made sense. So yeah, we definitely paid it and it paid off, you know, hundreds of times over, I guess.
How systemized were you about getting articles and backlinks and so on? What was your internal process?
So, you know, lots of spreadsheets to start with. You know, so we started with search results. So we were focusing on the first two or three or four pages of Google, you know, high authority websites, but, you know, not the type of like Engadget or Diverge, right? Long trail keywords as well. You know, we couldn't like nail like any .edu websites back in the day, right? But yeah, that was pretty much it. Lots of spreadsheets, lots of outreach. I was doing that on a personal level, you know, definitely for like the first couple of years. And then we started to hire people and scaled it.
You know, it's funny. It seems like you guys block Internet Archive from archiving your site. But I've gone back. Do you do that intentionally?
Not as far as I remember.
So I went back in other places and I saw early versions of your site. And what stands out to me was at some point early on, you guys were really good about adding share links to everything. Mm-hmm. Where if I saw an article, I can't get to it now. If I saw an article, I could easily share it. And it seems like seeing something interesting, sharing it on social was a good way for you guys to grow your traffic. Am I right or am I imagining that?
Yeah, definitely.
You know what else you did? It seems like in the beginning, you didn't say much about the content on the homepage. It was more about just like getting people to click into the article.
Yeah. But I mean, that got a lot of people confused and still actually many people are confused today that are like first time visitors or users. So we've been A/B testing like so much for the past like 2 or 3 years. You know, people think that we're a store most of the times because our reminds you, yeah, basically makes you think that it's an e-commerce website or a marketplace. But it's not, because if you click buy now, you'll get redirected to the seller's website.
Right.
So we wanted to make it clear. So if you're visiting the website, as a guest right now, you get a big like widget on top that says, you know, the number one product discovery platform and click here to join us. And, you know, we wanted to make it a bit, more straightforward for like our first time, visitor of how it works, what it is and how they can use it. And of course, what's the benefit of like something.
So if I understand right, the first set of visitors came because You guys would write articles on other sites. Actually, you'd hire a writer who would write articles, right?
Yeah, it's that in combination with like growth hacking, lots of like outreach, social media, you know, not just articles.
What are some of the growth hacking things that you did that worked?
Well, the one that I've mentioned earlier, it's a great example, actually. We partnered with lots of Facebook fan pages, you know, Twitter accounts as well back in the day. And we were like changing content. And then, of course,
go ahead. No, go ahead. And then, of course?
Yeah, and then, of course, like, you know, anything from blog post distribution services that I can't even remember one back in the day, but there were like hundreds, right? That you were using as a publisher in order to distribute your content. Something similar to like FeedBurner. But yeah, all these basically, you know, all these services added up and that resulted to like hundreds of thousands of visitors back then.
How did you learn about this? What website were you reading at the time to get to know all this stuff?
Yeah, not just one. So I wasn't reading any books back in the day. So I was like into, you know, let's find out about how the web works or marketing world or what are like the latest growth hacking techniques. So I keep doing that actually today because it's very useful. Like Google is like, you know, the biggest library, I'd say. So you can.
But are you going into, were there sites like Moz that were especially helpful for you?
Sure. Well, yeah, 100%. Definitely feel comfortable with Moz. Definitely. The early days of buffer.com, they started blogging. It was like more organic, I would say. So that was helpful regarding social media back in 2013. There were like a bunch of websites. Like if I go through my bookmarks right now, I probably have more than 300 bookmark websites.
Evan, the interesting thing about you is that you would read all this and not feel overwhelmed, not feel like, yeah, we should do it, but how do we fit it in with what we're doing? You'd find a way to start implementing. What was your process for taking an idea that you'd read and implementing it and not just saying, this is interesting, we should do something about it and forgetting about it?
Yeah, no, that's a great question. Because, you know, like I would say that internally in the company, most of the things that we're doing today as a team, and we're like 29 people at this point, close to 30 people. You know, most of the things I've done them myself to start with, I've learned that this, first of all, I learned everything myself, understood everything myself, analyzed everything myself, and then tried to teach someone else so I can like, in a way, outsource it. Right. So back in the day when I was scaling my business, it felt like something important. It felt like, okay, you know, we're onto something here. So, you know, I was spending and I still spend many hours trying to, you know, integrate the latest technologies, see how we can market this feature or that feature, what we can develop next in order to make it more interesting.
But it seems like what it is you were reading around looking for a next cool idea. You'd figure it out on your own if it made sense. And then once you did, you were very quick about passing it to somebody else.
Yes. 100%.
And then when you pass it on, what's your process for passing it on and making sure that it gets done and improved?
Well, first of all, understanding what's the right department, right? So, for instance, our operations teams, our operations team actually is a combination of like a social media team and a customer relations team. It's a hybrid model that we're trying to improve at this point. But I would say that that process would include finding the appropriate individual, making sure that they have the technical background or the experience actually. To do something like this, and then later on go through the process that I'm following and try to, you know, basically ask them whether they can improve it or not, because that's
you give them the process in what, a Google Doc? Is it set of checklists?
No, I don't do that. I prefer jumping on a one-on-one video call or something and just going through the process, making sure that they understand this, making sure what the goal is for the next month, week, or quarter.
So you say, this is how I've been doing it. Now you need to do it. And you set a goal. It's a metric that goes along with it?
Usually, depending on what we're doing, but yeah.
Okay. And then how do you make sure that they get it improved? I've gotten that far. So I'll do something like I'll edit, then I'll pass it on. I remember passing it on to a guy in Guatemala. He did great, but he did my way. We never checked back in to see if we could improve it. And now we're getting better at it. What was your process for improving?
Yeah, I think that's a great question. I mean, I think it's a two-step process, to be honest. The first one is to make sure that this individual can achieve the same numbers if it's measurable, right?
Right.
If it's quantified. So if they can achieve the same numbers, that means they're doing, you know, great job. They're doing what you're doing. So the next step is, you know, making sure, understanding on whether they can improve that process for you. So let's just talk about social media, for instance, right? So if you're doing something on Instagram stories right now and you get like 1,000 views as an example, and you pass it to someone from your team, you should ask them, like, can you think of something that we can get to like 2x that to get to 2,000, for instance, or 3,000 or even more than that. You know, and most of the times that's what they usually do. But, you know, I actually taught them the basics. So I know exactly what we're talking about when we jump on a call in 2 months or in a year from now and go through the strategies. So that's
just a matter of checking in on the numbers. And then do you have a regular team meeting or how do you get to see the numbers on a regular basis?
Yeah, that's a great question as well. So, I mean, I do weekly, I would say with most of the team, the core team at least, I do weekly one-on-ones, and then we do like, you know, marketing meetings, growth meetings, management meetings, and everything else in between. So yeah, definitely too many meetings.
And what, do you have a dashboard that's a spreadsheet with everyone's numbers on it? With the key numbers, or is there something else?
Yeah, it's not like you're doing something as an individual, to be honest, with an exception for like, obviously sales team and social media team. For everyone else, it's all about teamwork. So the numbers, you know, they don't matter necessarily. The, you know, customer relations, for instance, you know, they're going to have some numbers, but you're going to measure the team performance. You're going to make sure that not just as individuals they're doing well, or not as individuals are improving, but as a team. That's, I guess, more important.
So all social might be a few people, but as a team, they need to do well.
Correct.
Okay. And why is that important more than individual goals?
Well, I mean, you know, teamwork is, I think, is way more important than individual goals, because it's really hard to find chemistry within, you know, within your own team. So we've had that in mind from basically day one when we launched Scheduflow, and not day one, but day 100, let's just say, when we launched Scheduflow, and we thought about scaling the business. One of our concerns, I would say, was creating a culture that it's scalable, creating a team that has like chemistry. So didn't necessarily care about, you know, your bachelor's degree or your master's degree back in the day. Remember, we're just 21, right? So we wanted to actually hire people that understand our product and they're hungry basically to learn new things and to scale with this business. And that has helped us a lot.
All right. It looks like Archive for some reason just wasn't working well on your site earlier, and now it is, and I get to see what the earlier versions of the site look like. Yeah. Boy, it is just a standard WordPress site. Do you remember the first theme you used? I wonder if I could see it. Let me see.
Yeah.
What was it?
Oh, it's the dark with the orange stripes.
Yeah. See if I could theme. Oh, it was your own customized theme. The Gadget Flow is what you named it. But yeah, it was so basic looking WordPress theme that then became this big business. All right, let me take a moment to talk about my second sponsor. It's called HostGator. I want to tell anyone who's listening to me that, frankly, what Evan and his team did with the Gadget Flow, or now as it's called Gadget Flow, I guess you guys had to buy the domain Gadget Flow after a few years, right? Yeah.
Yes.
How much did it cost? I saw your eyebrows raised as I said it.
A lot.
A lot. Tens of thousands?
Yes.
Yeah. And the only reason it costs a lot is because you guys made the Gadget Flow so big. It's not like you had a 4-letter domain that you were trying to acquire. All right. Yep. So whatever he's doing, you guys could basically do it too. The idea is find a topic that's really super exciting. And if you're a little bit off in the beginning, it's totally fine. Look at this. The Gadget Flow for a long time had posts like Pac-Man cookie cutters. That's not making it on your site today, right?
Yep.
No, right? You got to figure it out. And the way to figure it out is by trying. The cool thing about going to HostGator is with one click, you could install WordPress and just get up and running. Evan, if somebody wanted to copy this and say, you know what, Gadget's a little bit done, I'm going to find a different topic and just keep showing these almost like glory porn shots of the thing. Like, real estate porn is a thing, right? There are blogs that are dedicated to just showing beautiful real estate. Gadget porn is a thing too. And Gadget used to do this. They don't do it so much. Actually, they're getting a little bit back into it. You guys do it. Beautiful photos of gadgets that people who are into it would just want to go and take a look and ogle all day. What's another topic that somebody could pick that is like that you would suggest?
I don't know. We thought about back in the day creating something like, call it Art Flow, which is going to be like related to art and paintings and stuff. Could be interesting.
Art Flow, especially if it's like the type of things that people would buy for the house. Absolutely. I could see furniture being a thing. Clothes, absolutely. Nothing but like really interesting outfits. Whatever it is that you think is your topic, there are people out there who are just going to love looking at it. If you find beautiful photos, that's what Evan and his team are good at. They find these beautiful photos. They don't even have to shoot it themselves. They find it. They make them look good on the site. And then they give people like me a place to go and just constantly ogle the latest stuff. And then we can click over and buy when we want to. He is not doing affiliate for some reason. You guys could, frankly, Wirecutter and so many other people do it. I don't know why you guys don't. I'll ask you in a moment. But There's also advertising in there, as Evan is discovering. It's doing well. If you're out there and you want to start a business like this, go to HostGator. Or if you're listening to the sound of my voice and you do not like your hosting company, you should not have to stay. The beautiful thing, especially if you've got WordPress or Magento or any of these other open source software platforms, you can take them to a competing site like that. Well, it's not like that. It's not hard, though. Right. In fact, if you're with a different company and you want to switch over to HostGator, HostGator will migrate you for free. All you have to do is go to the special URL, HostGator.com/Mixergy, where you're going to get up to 62% off their already low prices, one-click install of WordPress and so many other open source software platforms, unlimited email addresses, yada, yada, yada. The list is on there. The thing that I never talk about that I probably should is they give you a $100 AdWords offer to really kick your business off. They give you $50 in search credit with Yahoo and Bing. They really will do whatever they can to help get your business off the ground, because the more you do well, the better it is for them, because it means that you'll keep, you know, upping the plan that you have with them or staying with them for years and years and years, like I plan to. HostGator.com/Mixergy. Hey, why don't you take affiliate commissions? If you're linking to Amazon, if you're linking to other people, why not take a commission? If for no other reason than just to see what's doing well on your site so that you have more feedback into what you should be promoting more.
Well, we can measure that in so many different ways. But basically, the reason is because we curate these products that are on Gadget Flow on our platform at this point. And we've been doing so since day one. I mean, don't get me wrong. We tried affiliate for like, what, the first 6-7 months back in 2012. It worked great. Like in terms of revenue, it was a 4-figure revenue back in the day with, you know, that kind of traffic and everything. But today, I don't want people to think that, you know, we're showcasing this product because we're trying to sell them to you. We showcase this product because we just think that they're cool, first of all, right? And that we need to share them with the world. So, you know, on a typical day, you won't find like the latest, Google releases or the latest iPhone or anything like that. You'll find products that are not that easy to find, to be honest, that you have to spend, you know, a few minutes or maybe an hour on Google or on Amazon searching for something cool. So we don't want like, you know, people to think that we're just trying to sell something. That's why.
Okay, fair enough. So you're starting to build up your business. You're getting a bunch of you're starting to get into social. You're starting to go onto other people's Facebook pages. Buffer was a tool that you guys started to use to do what? Because I know that you guys are really good on software.
Yeah, scheduling, pretty much. So we were scheduling tweets and Pinterest posts, for instance, or Facebook posts, because literally back in the day for like the first year and a half, we had to manually do everything. So when we discovered Buffer, we're like, oh my God, that's insane. You know, it saved us so much time. So yeah, we're grateful for Buffer.
And then today you guys use, sorry?
We're not sponsored or anything.
I'm not either. But I do see Joel has created something fantastic with that business. That whole company did. And yeah. So it would just let you load up your latest articles and automatically and tweet them out. There's still a little bit of manual work in that, right? I think unless they change it recently, you still have to go in and actually enter the stuff, the posts in there versus.
That's for Instagram.
Sorry?
That's right. Yeah, I think that's for Instagram. Yeah, unfortunately, yes. But that's not their fault. It's due to the Instagram API. So, yep.
Okay. And then you started using CoSchedule. Why switch to CoSchedule for posting?
We haven't switched. We use their subject optimizer, and they have a title optimizer for SEO purposes. We use both actually at this point.
Okay. You told our producer, look, we use dozens of different software to help promote. What's one that is especially effective that we may not know about?
I don't know, Intercom, but I don't know if it's going to be useful for you. We use Intercom for like leads and customer support and pretty much everything.
What do you mean? I'm surprised that a content site would use Intercom. Intercom is that little thing that pops up in the lower right of many websites today that says, how can we help you?
Well,
content sites don't do that.
Yeah. Well, we're not just a content website, to be honest. We have so many features that you can use.
As a
So you can have your public or private list on Gadget and save your favorite products for like, you know, future reference.
There's always a save button on the
Site. We have We have the deals and discount section that, you know, we partner with brands and we make sure that we display offers for like the next 30 days. We use that as a user acquisition technique as well. So in order to access our deals and discount page, you need to have an account.
I see the deals and discount page?
You can find them either through the header menu on top, or if you go to the homepage, on the right side of new discoveries, there's like my feed and the discounts and deals section there.
And that's where you guys will sell products, and then you get a commission every time you sell, right?
No, there's no commission.
I keep wanting to say that you're doing commissions, and I'm wrong, and you are so against it that the few times that you interrupt me, and I'd love for you to interrupt me more, the few times that you interrupt me and say, Andrew, that's wrong, is when it comes to that. It's not. So how does it work?
Yeah, I mean, it's pretty much the same way. It's for customers. It's for people that want to offer like a discount to our users. It's for people, our editorial team, basically. We have a specific segment, our editorial team, department, I'd say, that, you know, looks for the latest discounts on the web, or, you know, specifically from Amazon. We've created, you know, an API tool that connects with Amazon APIs. And whenever there's like an offer from Amazon, we display it on Gadgetflow. So if you have that product into your wish list, for example, you would see that in your feed as well. So your feed is a feature that we've pushed live like 2 or 3 years ago that lets you select basically your favorite categories, and this just shows you products just from those categories. So you don't have to go through whatever we're curating on a daily basis. You could just say, I'm into car accessories, bike accessories, Mac accessories, and just, you know, make sure that you go through these products. So yeah, lots of features. We have a currency conversion. We've just added like 20 something, you know, currencies. You can check out Gadgetflow in like, you know, GBP or yen, or like Canadian dollar, Australian dollar, and everything. You know, we have filtering that you can use to check out like products between specific price ranges. So yeah, and of course, you know, my favorite feature is the augmented reality one that we have on our iOS app. I don't know if you saw that.
No, I didn't see that. You know what I noticed? I told you about this before we started. I love the little details of your app. Like whenever I scroll up, you have the parallax effect that will make the images for each product kind of reveal a little bit more of itself as I scroll up, which just encourages me to keep scrolling and scrolling and scrolling. All right, so how do I see augmented reality here? What am I looking for that?
If you go to the categories, should be second or third tab. And from there, available in AR.
Okay, I see Amazon, anniversary gifts, Apple Watch accessories available in AR. Okay, let's take a look. All right, so there's a Google Pixel 2.
Okay, just now click on the click on the button on top of the image.
Oh, view in augmented reality. Okay, loading. Can it use my camera? Yes, I get it. All right, now I can...
Just tap it somewhere.
Okay, I see. You know what? I've got to tell you, this is like a lot of augmented reality. It looks tiny on my, oh no, I take it back. All right. It doesn't exactly come out right. It looks really tiny on my desk, but
if I zoom in, I could. Yeah, it has to first analyze like the space. So it basically.
Oh, look at that. All right. So now I can move my phone behind this pixel and see it. Let me see that.
Yeah, it's funny.
Got it. And this is all your internal coding?
Yeah, 100%. We actually use, obviously, Apple's AR kit. But with that said, we were the one of the first five apps back in September 2017 when Apple introduced the AR kit, right? It was primarily us and the IKEA app that, and the house, of course, that introduced the augmented reality features. So we worked like, you know, day and night from June, the day that they announced this, up until like September 25th, if I remember correctly. And we were one of the first apps.
You know, one of the reasons why I thought that you guys were doing commission on sales was there's a new affiliate program that's mysterious. If I click the link, it doesn't tell me what I'm getting paid for. And I just kind of assumed the way it works is I refer traffic to you, and when somebody buys something, I get a commission. That's not how it works. How does the affiliate program work?
Oh yeah, that's for basically the ad buys that we offer to our customers. So if you're like an agency or you're a consultant in the crowdfunding market, we're big in the crowdfunding market, by the way. And you want to refer customers to us and say, hey, you know, you can use Gadgetflow to promote your business or your service. Okay. So they get a commission for every referral.
So all your revenue, 100% comes from advertising?
Yeah, at this point, yes.
Wowee, all right. That's surprising. I thought that whole thing died. And you guys are quick to jump on stuff, like we saw here with augmented reality. Facebook came out with their instant articles. What did you guys do about that? That was the one click, and you see the beautiful layout for their articles. What happened?
It wasn't just Facebook. Actually, we were one of the first businesses in general. Like whenever actually there's something new in the market, the publishing market, or you know, social media or anything, we strive to make sure that this, you know, we implement that feature ASAP. So instant articles was, you know, one great example. The Twitter cards, if you recall, like a few years ago, was the second. So we've seen, should have been like close to 5x our website traffic from Twitter just because we're using the product info card, Twitter card, basically.
And how long did it take your team to create that?
So yeah, that's the thing. So we've created the team who's, you know, who can communicate perfectly with us. So when we, you know, when we see like this type of announcement, everybody's excited to get started on this and, you know, work on this and push it live.
And just drop everything for a moment and say, we're going to get into this.
Yeah,
and then,
well, yeah, it depends. Let me just give you a couple of examples. So for instance, instant articles from Facebook was one. The AMP articles, obviously you know that from Google, right? Yep. So that is, that gave us like a 2x boost in terms of mobile traffic as soon as we implemented that. That was insane. So it's not just, you know, we're not just saying, oh, we have to have the latest features just because we want to look fancy, right? It's
because you're one of the first people to have it, it does help you a lot.
Exactly. Quick example, IGTV that Instagram introduced a few months ago, remember? So I published the story like after 5 hours from the announcement, and I got like on my personal profile, I only got like 27,000 followers or something. On my personal profile, I got 25,000 views.
Because you were one of the first people to do it. And what did you do?
Nothing. Just downloaded the first video editing app, and I just created a roundup with my drone footage. I piloted a DJI Mavic, and I created a drone roundup, let's just say, with, you know, great shots for like 20, 30 seconds, and got like 25,000 views organically.
And then did you do more of those?
Yeah. I do some personal branding every here and there.
But is Instagram's video app actually useful for you guys now, or is that a test that didn't pan out?
I don't know. I haven't made my mind yet, to be honest.
Okay.
It's useful for sure, but I don't think that portrait is the way to go, to be honest.
You know what? I was surprised that you stopped. It seemed like Medium was sending you a good chunk of traffic.
Yeah.
You guys had really interesting approach to Medium. What you would do is you do these roundups. Back to school happening. Here are 18 different things that you'd want for back to school. Beautiful photo, a paragraph of text underneath it. You already had basically that stuff on your site, right? The backpack with the plug-in USB thing you had on your site. You just had to take the picture, put a little bit of text, make it relevant. That was sending you traffic. Are you in touch enough with the media team and the numbers to know why you guys stopped Medium?
For sure. First of all, it was time consuming, but obviously that's not an excuse. The most important reason is primarily the fact that we're sending a lot of traffic to Medium, not the other way around, because we're promoting those articles on our newsletter, social media channels, and basically, you know how it works. Medium scales your traffic. So if you send like 1,000 visitors, Medium's gonna think, oh, this article is important, so we're gonna increase its visibility, its reach and everything. So we're gonna send another 1,000. But at the end of the day, that only happened with a small portion of our articles. I would say like 20 or even 30%, if I remember correctly. So when we started to A/B test that and compare it with publishing our own content on our blog and sending people on our blog, which basically uses the same header as the marketplace, we realized that it's way more efficient. So it's all about A/B testing.
A bunch of different tests. Something new comes out, you sit down with your team, you say, how can we use this? What can we do in this? And you move fast, you experiment, and then you analyze the data.
Correct. Yeah.
Sometimes you look at feedback from people. You told our producer, look, we had a bunch of complaints about our sign-in flow. What was the issue there? And then how do you handle that?
So yeah, like since our early days, you know, I was obsessed personally with like feedback, especially from our early users, because it's very important to get their feedback and basically create a product not with whatever you think that it's gonna be like interesting and cool, but whatever they think that it's gonna be cool. Most of the times, you know, 99% of it to say they win. So with the onboarding, basically with the sign up process, you know, it wasn't flawless. It had its issues. Back in the day, it was slow. You were getting redirected to your profile, and then users wanted to save something to their wishlist, and they were losing that page. You know, it wasn't okay. It wasn't good, let's just say. So we improved that. We improved that within like hours, if I remember correctly. It was mostly like a day or so, because you know, I was like, I gathered the team. I was like, guys, you know, we've never got this important feedback ever before, so let's just focus on this. Fix it so we can have a way better like onboarding home. And you know what happened? With just one innocent, like let's just say email form that we're using back in the day, we improved our signups by like 25-30%. just because one user reached out and said, hey guys, this thing is broken, you need to fix it. So what, that's why.
So we get a lot of feedback too. I never know if we're spending enough time on the things that matter from email and ignoring some things that, or ignoring the things that matter. It's really hard to figure out what to address. How did you know what to address?
So we use Trello. It's one of the services that we're using, right? So we use Trello for like prioritizing the most important bugs and, you know, ideas and what, which feature we're going to do next and everything. So when we get feedback from our users, if we get, for instance, 10 emails and two of the emails have the same pretty much content, we're going to prioritize on that. So it's,
and so,
you know,
is it on, you guys use Help Scout. We use it to check email, right?
We don't use it anymore. We actually transitioned from Help Scout to Intercom like a few months ago.
Intercom completely. So if somebody gets if customer service gets an email in Intercom and then another one addressing the same issue, it's on them to go to Trello and add a card for it manually.
Yes. If they can't fix it, obviously on their own. Yes. That's how they do it. And assign
what
it
to been doing is, we tag it and then we go back in and look at tags, but that's just not efficient enough.
We use tags as well on top of that, just to notify the, you know, appropriate departments. We use lots of automations through Zapier, you know, that have saved us like, I don't know, hundreds of hours on a daily basis, I'd say. But yeah, definitely.
How many people on customer service?
Right now it should be four people.
Four people? Why'd you switch from Help Scout to Intercom?
Convenience, 100%. Because we're using both. We're using Intercom for like lead generation. Well, not lead generation, but the live chat feature that leads to lead generation, I would say. And we're using two tools, and Help Scout couldn't keep up with all these emails that we're getting, because we get a lot of emails right now. We thought that we would give Intercom a try. We tested it for like 2 weeks. So I sat down with my CSO and said, okay, you know, we need to switch. And it took like 2 months to move everything over, because we were relying so much into automation. Automations are everything internally. That was the most challenging switch I've personally ever done.
Customer service software, because all the different automation of how to respond to things goes away. All the filters go away.
Pretty much. Yes. Along with other things.
You ever regret not taking funding? I feel like you told our team that in 2013, it seemed like there was a lot of money and you guys didn't get it. Do you regret it? And why didn't you get it?
No, definitely not, because we would have given like a huge chunk of our company and I don't know. Yes, I don't regret it, actually. We pitched the Gadgetflow back in 2013. You know, everybody was getting funded. Like the silliest idea, for instance, we'd raise $10 million or $1 million. And I was like, what is happening, right? So we sat down with the Greek founders. We're like, what, 22 at the time? And we said, okay, let's try the local community. So we find out which are like the top three VCs in Athens back in the day. And we booked an interview with one of them. So we went there. We were prepping for like, I don't know, 2 or 3 or 4 weeks for the presentation. And we were anxious and everything. So we went there and they're like, they weren't actually paying attention because of our age, first of all. Second of all, I don't think they understood our model, but even if they did, they were just not interested. And they said, you know, your business model is not scalable. That's just it. And we're like, okay. So, you know, it was a bummer for us, you know, for like the first 24 hours. And then we thought, okay, we're gonna prove them wrong. So that's, you know, today I'm kind of proud that things turned out this way, because, looking back, we would have lost like a good, 25-30% of our company. And for what? Just, scaling faster. So,
and then you would have been pushed to get into every new thing that could potentially blow up. What about the fact that you aren't you dating your co-founder?
Oh yeah.
You are. Is that an issue? I don't think I could do that.
No. I mean, many people like ask us like, how do you do it? Like work together, travel together, do everything together. And I was like, we're pretty compatible, let's just say. We enjoy doing things together and we're having fun along the way. So it works.
All right, let me close it out with one more thing that I've been trying to get out throughout this interview, and I think I need a little bit more on this, that you try so many different things and you you don't get bogged down and you seem organized. Like, it's so many different promotional experiments. Like, you're in a bunch of magazines. I think I saw that on your homepage. But in preparing for this interview, my team looked at a bunch of articles in Forbes and other places to see, is this guy of substance? Does it actually make sense? And there's a ton on you. So you do that. You do the Twitter thing. You do the Facebook instant articles. Even if instant articles goes away, it's worth a shot. You try this, you try that. It feels like you have a process for doing it that I want to get at. And that to me seems like a big takeaway that anyone listening to us can leave and just have their business change by. How do you test all these different things fast, get results and move on and not get bogged down, not get into, you know, guys, we have to figure this out. It's, and then get lost in trying to figure it out. How do you actually take action on all these different ideas, these growth hacking ideas?
That's a good question. I guess from my side, you know, in short, I would say that I just take action. Many people, you know, want to do things and they're like, let's organize it. Let's create a to-do list. Let's put it on Trello. Let's create cards. At the end of the day, you know, they just never do it. I'm the opposite. I would start even without even writing down the idea. I wouldn't even make a note. I wouldn't even create a to-do list up until the point that I get that the thing that I'm doing, you know, is basically get some, becomes a substance, right? So it's something interesting. It works and I'm going to do it and I'm going to keep doing it. That's when I take notes. That's when I'm writing my thoughts down. And that's the only time. In terms of learning new things, I would say that it's whether you're interested or not. So I'm just having a lot of fun.
The learning part is easy and fun. Taking action and then saying to the team, let's get this up and running in a week. And then they say, all right, we didn't get it done this week. We need another week. But meanwhile, you have another idea to test out because now Facebook came out with a thing and then Twitter came out to something match it. That's the hard part of testing it. And then analyzing everything that you've done to see how you can keep improving it so it doesn't get stale or get rid of it like you did with Medium. That's the part that it seems like you must have some process that we can learn from, but it's not that systemized, is it?
I think it has to do with passion as well, to be honest with you, because, you know, like back in like 10 years ago, CEOs were not like super involved with the technical aspect of the business, right? I'm not talking about billion-dollar businesses, but startups as well. Today, if you notice that like in the tech market in general, CEOs are directly involved with like their marketing teams, their developers, their CTO and everything. So this group of people is related for the past like, I don't know, 10, 12, 15 years. And it didn't used to be like that actually in the past. So I would say that definitely it's also passion, because if I'm passionate for something and I made sure that, you know, I hired like people that are passionate with what they're doing and they trust me and there's chemistry in the team, yes, they're going to follow me. They're not going to be like, you know, oh, he came up with another idea. We're not going to do it or we're screwed, right? They're not going to say something like that because we work together and we have a common goal to scale this business. And they get
it. How do you keep the passion going? You guys are all remote, right?
Yeah, 100%. So, I mean, we just did our first team retreat in Osaka, Japan. So we gathered half of the team, the core team, actually. We're planning our second one next year, 2019. And I mean, you know, we do weekly meetings. I would say that there's an, you know, special formula.
Just Zoom meetings, get in and you start the meeting with something motivational, something that says the vision for the company every week.
Yeah, exactly. Something like that. We do weekly updates. You know, we do talks. We have smaller groups of people that are meeting that have the same interests. So we try to keep a connection, like an open channel between the team. It's not like 100% work. So in some scenarios, it's even better than just being in the same office space, you know?
All right. The website for anyone who wants to get sucked into this, what I'm going to call gadget porn is, you know what? I was going to say gadgetflow.com, but that just redirects to the gadget flow still.
Yeah. We haven't actually switched over yet. We haven't for like close to a year now.
Regardless what it is, I'm going to say to anyone who's listening, if you're really into gadgets, they're going to be a little bit promotional about their app and you're going to say, I don't need another app for content. Who gives a rat's ass, right? It just feels a little bit like annoying. Like when I go to Reddit and they keep getting me to use the app, I think the website is fine enough. I just like the design of the app. And if you're into design at all, it's worth downloading the app just for that reason. And if you're into gadgets, you might want to avoid the site or save it for a time when you can just get lost in it. It's called the Gadget Flow or gadgetflow.com. And the two sponsors who made this interview happen are Well, if you want to copy Evan, hostgator.com will make it easy for you to set up a WordPress site. But man, you're going to have to work like mad. And second, if you want to hire a great developer, go check out toptal.com/mixergy. Hostgator.com/mixergy, toptal.com/mixergy. And finally, I'm going to close this out by saying, if you have one of the smart speakers in your house, the kind that you can actually shout out, I'm not going to say the name, but say its name, say, hey, whatever it is, and then say, play Mixergy, and let me know if it's working for you or not. I'm wondering if the name Mixergy is actually tripping up these smart devices, or if it's clear enough that the devices actually know what to play. I'm curious about that. So shout it out and let me know on the site, or just email me, andrew@mixergy.com. Thanks, Evan.
Thanks for having me.
All right. Bye, everyone.